Let's have a look at the theoretical construct that provides us with a way of specifying how pairs should work. And that would be the context-free grammars. So let's dive right in. So the context-free grammars are usually a good way to express something that has some kind of nested structure, what usually is a thing that programming languages have. So context-free grammars might already be hinted at by this concept of nesting, in programming languages you have concepts like matching brackets and matching curly brackets for blocks and all that. So this is usually a good hint for that there's some kind of nested structure already going on, and that grammars might play a role in that. What you could ask yourself further is, what are the basic units over which these grammars reign? And well, you could be of the you could have the idea that you would express those grammars over all possible units in a program that there are, but you know, the problem with that, since this is just infinitely many tokens as soon as you start introducing identifiers. So you usually want to have something more compact that is not cluttered with all these string producing productions in your grammars. And for that purpose, you usually go back to have the token classes as the finite alphabet of terminals for your grammar. So what you specify is rules that introduce structure on the token classes used in found in your input file. Okay, so what is a context-free grammar in a formal setting? Well, that's what you can see here. So the context-free grammar is usually considered to be a four-tuple consisting of the terminals, which we have clarified to be the token classes of your underlying scanner. Then some non-terminals that are specific to your language. So this would be things like expressions or while loops or whatever constructs you have in there. And some start symbol that everything would collapse into. This would be like a program file or a translation unit, a compilation unit, or whatever you have in your concrete language. So these are very, very general terms. Then what you also need, of course, is the productions, or also called rules, of your context-free grammar. And this is where all the meat is in this thing. The productions actually define the hierarchical structure that you want to be able to consume with your automaton in the end, or produce with your grammar if you're in the grammar world. So how do these rules or productions look like? Well, there's a few components to that. There's usually a left-hand side that we call uppercase A, which usually is taken from the non-terminals. So you have a non-terminal on the left-hand side. Then there's this becomes operator. And then there's a right-hand side, alpha, which is considered to be a string out of non-terminals and terminals of arbitrary length. So you map a non-terminal to string of non-terminals and terminals. Yeah. So an example for that would be this little grammar over here. So it's two rules. Both of them refer to a left-hand side, which is just one non-terminal. It's the only non-terminal that there is in this grammar. And you map from this thing to either that string or that string down there, which, well, the one down there is like the empty string. I just put this epsilon here to denominate that this is the empty string. It's just a marker. And above, the rule just says that S becomes lowercase a, S lowercase b. And with that, you get a grammar that, in this example here, produces you strings consisting of first A's, then B's, and both of them have the same number. Yeah? So it's A to the N, B to the N. As conventions, you have maybe already seen that on this slide, but just to make it clear, non-terminals we will find in green and usually in uppercase letters. If we have concrete examples, I might switch over to something more speaking, like these bracketed terms, like expressions or statements in that case. If we are talking about terminals, then these will be blue, lowercase letters in the abstract versions, and if I have concrete examples, they will turn into something like this int or name, which is just a string without any brackets around. Yeah, so that's a convention that we will use later on. So here's an example of a more useful grammar than the one before. So this is like a mini version of a programming language here that starts with a root element that's quite abstract, this S, and then maps to statements. Well, a statement then becomes either some if thingy, a while thingy, or an rexp thingy with a semicolon in the end. So what would an if thingy be? Let's have a look at this rule. If thingy would become this if bracketed rexp statement else statement. So, well, this could be, for example, like an if statement, when stmt would be a statement. Yeah? Then the statement would also be able to become while. So let's have a look at what while is. While would be while bracketed rexp and a statement. So this already reminds us a lot of what a while loop looks like. The only question now is, what is this mysterious rexp? And that's what we can have a look at down there. So this could either become an, well, what we have here is int. This does not mean that this is literally int, but in our context, this would be a terminal that would be an integer constant, for example. Could also be a thing that we would call lexp, or here lexp is assigned by a rexp, and so on. So this already gives you an idea what could be behind that. So this looks a lot like what an expression looks like. And indeed, what this rexp means is a right-hand side expression. So this is usually an expression that you can find on the right-hand side of an assignment. So to make a statement out of such a right-hand side expression, you have seen that in our language it suffices to take this rexp and add a semicolon to it. You also see such a mysterious lexp thingy appear in there, and, well, if rexp is a right-hand side expression, this is a left-hand side expression. And indeed, you see that this lexp is occurring on to the left of some assignment here. So yeah, there are certain rules what left and side expressions can do and what where they appear. So for example, a left and side expression can be a name, so something like an identifier. Yeah, so that's usually a variable name. Okay, and so on. So there's a lot more that I won't show you here, for that is there for a complete programming language. You can find such example grammars for arbitrary languages online, and there's even standardization documents for well-known languages that tell you how these grammars should usually look like if they are well written. A few more conventions that we haven't had before. So we didn't say that there's necessarily just one rule with a particular left-hand side symbol, but there could be several of them in order to make it a little bit more easy to grasp. We usually unify them into just one left-hand side and collect right-hand sides in alternations, like we did, for example, over here. So here we have collected three different rules that talk about statement on the left-hand side and just put them all in this alternation version of the right-hand side. So this is just a convention. You could all the same just list all three of these rules, different from each other. Then the next convention there is the way of expressing that you want to talk about a particular part of a rule. So for that, we introduce a certain way of describing that. So there's the introduction of this pair with the left-hand side of a rule here at the first component and index that would point us to whichever symbol, with symbol being non-terminal or terminal, of the rule we want to point to. So with something like if 3 or something, we would point to the if rule and the 0 indexed third element of that. So this was not particularly nicely done, since the if just has one. Sorry about that. So it would rather have to be something like of course statement, and let's say 2 or something, and with that we would point to the statement rule and the second component. Yeah, so this rex if you start from 0. Yeah, okay. So as running examples for practical grammars, we will now and then encounter situations where we need those. So here's a few of them, so that you can meditate on them a little bit earlier already than just at the spot where we really meet them in later on in our algorithms. So there's one grammar over here that talks about is, so the non-terminals, and plus star, brackets, name and int. So what could that be? Well, that's arithmetic expressions with multiplication and addition and prioritizing with brackets, variables and integer constants. in one form, like the one from above, or the one from below. It's talking about exactly the same names, and turns out that both grammars actually describe the same language, so they have the same semantics in a particular way. If we want to then apply the concept from before, where we name our variants of rules accordingly, here we introduce numbers so that we can later on see what we refer to. So in the first case, for example, with E and 2, we would refer to this one. The second example with F and 1, we would refer to this one. Yeah, okay. So that is so far everything on just purely the grammars. Next thing that we're going to see is a little bit on the semantics of grammars.